all you Valiant fans, this is Jace coming to you live once again from New York Comic Con. I'm here with the writer of Shadow Man, Andy Diggle. Andy, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's been a few years since you've been on the show, so it's great to have you back.
It's great to be back.
So, we've been talking about Shadow Man.
Mm-hmm.
Jesse from the Valiant Fans forums and I were saying that now that the first arc has kind of ended, we have a good idea of what you're going to do. And what's been so great about your run so far is you didn't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You incorporated everything that came before, and you made it make sense, and now you're about to start telling your story. Is that right?
Yeah, like I've been trying to, like, it's actually very reassuring to hear you say that, because like I've been sort of juggling, trying to figure out, you know, which elements are essential, what works, what doesn't work, figuring out what to keep and what to throw away. But I think the main thing that I was invested in, and that I really wanted to make sure we saw through to the end, was straightening out Jack's relationship with the Lower, you know, because we'd seen it in the previous run, we'd seen Jack take a pretty dark turn and do some things that are fairly unforgivable, you know, and so I'm trying to sort of reconcile his behavior with him still being a hero and sort of, I guess, finding his better self, you know. And I'm also, I kind of wanted to redeem him a little bit, I think. I kind of wanted to get him out of this horrible situation he's in, but he's got to earn it to get there, you know. Like, I can't just give him a get-out-of-jail-free card. So I guess by issue 11, you are going to see, the issue 11 at the end of our third arc, and you're going to see his relationship with the Lower is going to change. And I'm hoping that that's going to be really kind of laying the groundwork for the future of Shadow Man. It's kind of like, after that, I was going to say, you know, nothing will ever be the same again, because it's kind of a comic book cliche. Right. But I think one of the reasons I wanted to do the time travel stories, the flashbacks to the previous the Shadow Men, is to, like, you know, to show that there's stuff you don't know about this relationship that humans have with the Lower, you know. And that's the start. I'm using that as a foundation for what we're going to do next with who Jack is going to become, you know. But a lot of it so far has been, it's not quite tying up loose ends, but resolving some of these things that have been left over. And I wanted to make Jack free and independent, because everything he's done has been so reactive. He's been so kicked around by, you know, Nicodemo Dark and Baron Samedi and all these different characters who are kind of pulling his strings. I wanted to get him into a situation where he can become the master of his own fate instead of constantly just reacting to stuff that comes in from outside, if that makes sense.
No, it totally does. And one thing that you've done by doing the time travel stuff, you know, because Valiant's a relatively, you know, young company.
Yeah.
These characters, you know, they've only been around 25 years or so not a long time. But you've introduced this idea of Shadow Man as a legacy character, and now you've opened up this whole new avenue of storytelling. There's all these different eras that you yourself or subsequent writers can explore, right?
Sure, but I mean, like, none of that was me. I mean, like, he was already a legacy character. In the original, you know, 2012 series, that, you know, they made it clear that he was something like, you know, the sort of sixth or eighth or whatever it was, Shadow Man. There had been others. The abettors existed. There was already an abettor network set up to train and help and aid and abet the Shadow Man. So it's not, I didn't invent the idea that he was legacy. It just kind of occurred to me that it just felt like, well, that's really low hanging fruit. Like, there's all this history there that nobody's explored yet. And I'm like, well, I just really like the idea. You know, I want to write a Western, I want to write a noir, I want to be able to play in all these different sandboxes. And it just gave me a way to, you know, to build up Jack's backstory, whilst also being able to work with different artists and different styles, telling different kinds of stories, you know. And one of the big appeals for me with doing those flashback stories was getting to work to a particular artist's strengths. You know, like Sean Martinborough literally wrote the book on how to draw noir comics.
Right.
You know, so I'm doing like a noir story set in 40s Manhattan, like, you want Sean Martinborough to draw it. And we've done so many books together. So it was a way to explore different styles and different genres, whilst also building out the backstory of Shadow Man. Like I say, it's kind of laying the groundwork for where it's all going in the present day. But it occurs to me only in hindsight that I probably could have laid out a little more clearly what the where it was all going. Like, it's not just like, you know, some random aside that you don't need to read. It's laying the groundwork for, you know, basically Baron Samedi sent Jack back in time. Jack's assuming that, you know, it's Baron Samedi trying to kill him, but actually there's more going on. I very much like the idea of playing Baron Samedi, not as, you know, he's just evil because he's dead. It's like, no, he's a trickster, he's a sly fox, you know, he's kind of he's Loki, you know, he's playing games within games, he's playing, you know, the voodoo pantheon against humans, and it's not immediately apparent what his real agenda is, and it will become more apparent as time goes by.
That's interesting to hear you say that, because we had that exact conversation on the podcast when we covered the last issue, that yeah, Baron sent him on this mission, and Jack's going to be the better for it, but Baron doesn't do anything that's not selfish.
Right.
So there's got to be a reason behind that. And something else that we saw is you sent him back, like, yeah, there was previous Shadow Man and Jack knew that, but you sent him further back than we've ever seen it go before. And not only that, we now know the name of the Loa, which traditionally there's that that idea in magic that once you have the name of something, you have power over it. So is that something that will be explored as well, that now Jack has a better understanding of,
yes,
and you know, a way to kind of, instead of trying to control the Loa, almost like a working relationship, right?
Yeah, right. You know, or a partnership, in fact. Like, for me, the subtext of the whole series is it's about control. Like, you know, the bottom line for me is, like, you know, Shadow Man is a voodoo hero, okay? Voodoo is a folk religion created by slaves, okay? But the idea of control is kind of baked into it. And the idea that the Shadow Man was created by the daughter of a slave plantation owner, she turned her lover into Shadow Man without even asking him if he wanted this. She just kind of imposed it on him to turn him into a supernatural bodyguard, you know. And for me, like, that's a really messed up thing to do.
Oh yeah.
You know, that's so not cool. And I wanted to, and Jack's kind of had never asked for this, you know, he's had this thing imposed on him that he never even knew that was going to be his legacy. And so everyone, I think there's, people are maybe expecting Jack, they think his arc is going to be learning how to control the Loa. Okay. And I'm like, well, it shouldn't be about controlling. It, you know, because controlling other people isn't the way forward. That's not, it shouldn't be about that. That's not a noble goal. Okay. So that's what he's going to be learning from those flashback stories, and where he's going in the third arc, which, you know, spoiler alert, I'm bringing back Sandria Dark, because for me, that whole creation of the Shadow Man myth, the legacy rather, is kind of like, you know, what she did is not cool, and like, they're going to have words, you know. So, and that his relationship with Sandria Dark, who created the Shadow Man, and his relationship with the Loa, is all going to get resolved in arc three. But I don't like the idea of Jack controlling the Loa. I don't like the idea of the Loa controlling Jack. I like the idea of them choosing, like I said before, like coming to the idea of like putting him in a position where he can choose his own fate rather than simply being manipulated by other people all the time.
Well, I think you're doing a great job with the book, so thank you so much for your time, and I think all the Valiant fans out there listening will be very excited to hear that Sandria Dark is coming back, because she's a real fan favorite. Every time she shows up, everybody's like, yes. So thanks so much for your time.
It's been a pleasure.
And yeah, it's the book's amazing. So
thank you. Appreciate
congratulations.
It.
Congratulations. All right, all you Valiant listeners, I'm sitting here with Jodi Hauser. I would call her the caretaker of faith.
That's a pretty good description, actually.
The first writer to write her solo. So in a way, you probably feel like she's your child almost.
Well, it's funny because I get a lot of people who, because it's the first time that they're familiar with the character, a lot of people thank me for creating her, which I, you know, very much didn't. And I always, you know, let them know her history and that they can go back and read Harbinger and, you know, learn more about where she came from. But, you know, the fact that we were sort of able to break her out and introduce her to a new audience of fans, and that they're continuing to follow her adventures with once Dreamside is out, that'll be 24 full issues of Faith that I've written. So it's been great to take her on this journey and, you know, have her become a hero who means so much to so many readers.
Yeah, and it really speaks to kind of the no, not to get too philosophical, but the forward thinking of the original Valiant to create a character like this who doesn't look like a prototypical, you know, character. And then in the new iteration of Valiant that Joshua Dysart did so brilliantly is bring in kind of the pop culture side of it that we're, you know, that we all love, and you're continuing that. So she's such an inclusive character, and that's really got to speak to people, right?
And I know she was originally very much modeled on some of the women they were working with, and like back in the day, I believe she was still a Star Trek fan. I know she was definitely an ElfQuest fan, so that element of fandom has always been there. And for me, the fact that she's trying to model her sense of morality and her sense of heroism over, like, based on some of the greatest comic book heroes that, you know, we all know and love. I mean, I think that's something a lot of people can relate to, because, you know, if we got superpowers, wouldn't we be looking to what, you know, like Superman and Wonder Woman and Spider-Man and all of the greats that we grew up being huge fans of, how they, you know, carried on this important legacy?
So in this this new story, you're taking a bit of a different tack, though, right? Like, she's always, Faith has always been, I call her the hope beacon of the Valiant universe. You know, she's always so positive. And in this new story, you're taking things a little darker. You're challenging Faith, right? Can you tell our listeners kind of what the story's about?
Yes, at the end of her ongoing series, she was framed by a group of her supervillains who all came together, called the Faithless, for murder. And she hasn't been able to track them down to clear her name yet. So for quite a while now, she's been wanted by the authorities on charges of murder, which, you know, is very much not who she is, but it was a very good frame job. So she's somewhat gone into hiding, and she's living as her alter ego, and she's trying to find a balance of how she can still help people without, you know, revealing where she is and who she is, because, you know, she is wanted by the authorities. So it's sort of an odd, uncomfortable place for her to be in, and it's really the first time she's been in a place like this since she became a superhero, and she's really working through how to deal with this. And that's right when Anomalia comes to her for help. And because Faith is the hero she is, she can't say no when someone needs her help.
Now, we're going to be exploring, and she's going to be traveling with Anomalia to a new place in the Valiant universe we haven't seen before, right?
Well, it's actually an area of the Dead Side that we haven't seen yet, called the Dream Side. And she enlists the help of Dr. Mirage, because this is very much not her area of specialty, but for Dr. Fong, it is. So that's, and also being a fan of their show, you know, it's sort of a win-win for Faith. It's like, this person knows what they're doing. Also, I'm a huge fan of her, so it's kind of a fun team-up book, but there's also definitely a bit of a horror story element to it, both in terms of, you know, the real-world challenges Faith is facing and then where they end up.
And I love the fact, we saw in the first issue, you were just talking about it, how Faith just can't help herself, right? So yes, she's wanted. Yes, she knows she shouldn't make herself seen in public. But when she comes upon a situation where somebody needs her help, she just can't help herself. And that's innate in the character. Does that speak to fans? Like, do you hear that from other people, that she literally inspires real world action?
I mean, I think definitely the positivity speaks to people, and the fact that she has always believed that she can make a difference. And I think that's an idea that really does resonate with people, because that's sort of the kind of hero you want to see. You want to see someone who's going out there for positive reasons. And, you know, I love dark and gritty superheroes. I've written dark and gritty superheroes, but you always need to have those heroes who are acting out of hope, and the hope that they can make things better for other people.
Just hoping to find a...
Now, not that we want you to leave Faith, but do you have any plans or aspirations to work on some other characters in the Valiant universe?
I mean, I have, to an extent. I definitely pulled in a lot of characters for Faith and the Future Force. I love doing these team-up characters, teaming up other characters with Faith, because of the way that people operate differently. Honestly, like, my favorite team-up I would love to do would be Faith and Ninjak, just because they're so opposite in terms of their methods and their willingness to kill, let's say. And I just think that would be just a really fun clash of personality. But I have gotten to play a little bit, especially with some of the X-O Man of War backups I wrote. I loved writing Ninjak, actually. That was a lot of fun. But yeah, it's always, it's interesting to see what the future could hold.
Yeah, it's great to hear you say that, because like my dream project for you at Valiant would be to see you on a solo Ninjak book, exactly for the reasons that you said. Because we've learned so much in Matt Kint's run about kind of the tragedy of him and his childhood, and you have such a unique outlook. I would love to see you, what you could do with the character. So fingers crossed. I'll bug all the other guys about it. Like, hey, we need to get Jody on a Ninjak story at some point. So
that would be awesome. Yeah,
that's really great. Anything else you want to share with our listeners?
Book is the Faith in the Dream Side is definitely going to get pretty weird. So be prepared for a wild ride.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for your time, Jody. It's always good to see
you. Thank you.